magic in the early morning we found. When the sunrise smiles.
Okay, so I'm here with Reed Cohen, who was most recently the director of 8, The Mormon Proposition. Reed, how are you doing?
I'm good. It's a great day in New York City.
Yes, it is. I wanted to go ahead and cut straight to the chase. Your film deals with how the Mormons were able to mobilize, using training videos and secret documents, this campaign for Proposition 8. But I'm kind of curious about this because you point out, quite rightly, that the Mormons appealed to outsider figures, people who could not be associated with the LDS, with which to promulgate their particular viewpoint. And I'm wondering if your film doesn't deal with the question of whether the Know-on-Eight people did not necessarily do the same thing, using outsider figures with which to get the centrists. I mean, 52% is quite a large portion of the California public. So my question is do you think that the Know-on-Eight campaign failed because they failed to adopt this particular strategy? Or?
What I will say is that we can learn a lot from the Mormon playbook.
Yeah.
We can learn a great deal. Gay people and their allies can look at what Mormons did in California and what they've done in other states and how they've crafted this since the 90s. And we can see what it takes to win a ballot measure. Of course, we choose to use the good things that they did and not the bad things. The good things being mobilizing our people to get out on the street and talk to people door to door. The playbook that they had did have some sinister elements and components from all of the critics, but it also showed how a people can mobilize and get the word out and do it fast and effectively. And gay people and their allies could take a page out of the Mormons' playbook and I think use it quite effectively.
Well, Elder Russell Ballard in the film even says, go on Twitter, use social networks. The Know-on-Eight people, they spent about $43 million to the $40 million of the Yes on Eight people. So it seems to me that money is not really the answer, that it's more a failure strategy on the part of the No on Eight folks.
Well, let's not forget, though, that money actually buys a great deal of airtime. And I would contend, you know, I was raised a Mormon and schooled in their Mormon seminaries from 7th to 12th grade and then schooled on how to be a missionary and knock door for 2 years. I know how they do this. And I would argue that Mormons know how to utilize the media better than anyone. Mormons value looking good to society. We've all seen the commercials, the very heartwarming commercials from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And they've put an imperative on looking good and sounding good to the public. And gay people and their allies could also take a page out of their book and start to humanize this issue, which is what we try to do with this film also. It's one thing to follow the memos and the money, but you have to humanize the issue and show the people affected. And Mormons have been great at humanizing their cause and showing their families, and I think we need to do that as well.
So the Mormons have a head start with the cheesy commercials from the 80s, I remember, than the 70s.
Well. Sure. Yeah. Family. Isn't it about time?
Yeah.
That's right. And it is about time that we tell the story of our families, our LGBT families, and we let the citizenry know, the people who will end up voting, that we're human beings too, and we do have families, and we get up and put our pants on one, you know, leg at a time, and do the very same things that straight families do, and we value the same things, and we need to send that message.
You juxtapose the victory, regrettably, of Prop 8 with the rise of Obama, who also won that particular evening. I'm wondering if that's a fair juxtaposition, given that Obama and Biden have never explicitly declared any support for same-sex marriages. Obama did tisk-tisk the discriminatory practices in California, but he favored civil unions and not outright marriage. And so I'm wondering if, to some degree, Obama may very well be as bad as the Mormons with this half-hearted approach.
Well, first of all, in the film, what we do is we juxtapose the moment. We show this great moment in our society, whether you like Obama or not, or his policies or not. I think everyone, even John McCain, stepped forward and said, we have to look at this moment in history and notice that, and mark it, and see that this is an amazing thing that we have an African-American president. And so what we did in the film was we juxtaposed the fact that there was a civil rights victory on that night, really. And we got to see people like Rosa Parks win that night. You know, Barack Obama didn't only win, but the people whose shoulders he stands on won as well that night. And so there was that grand moment. But then what we're really doing is juxtaposing it against another civil rights struggle And we show that on that night, another group, another minority lost, and we lost big time, and it hurt. And so that was our juxtaposition. Relative to the president, my hope is that he will realize, and I think he does, I hope he does, the import of being in office and how far he's come and the shoulders he stands on, and also not forget that on his watch today, gay families are waking up all over the United States with fewer rights than their straight counterparts, and this is happening on his watch. And what I would ask him, as the father of two little adopted boys who are being raised in a relationship that does not enjoy the same benefits and protections, rights and privileges as my neighbors who are straight, what I would ask on behalf of my children and other children in LGBT families is, Mr. President, do not wait for an anticipated second term. My children deserve things to be made right today.
Yeah. We were talking about framework of a message earlier, and in this film, you did make efforts to try to talk to some Mormons, but I noticed that in your telephone conversations, you called yourself a Prop 8 documentary. I'm wondering if you could have perhaps managed to get these people on the record if you had actually called yourself a family values documentary, because what we're really talking about here is an issue of family values, and I'm wondering why there wasn't so much subterfuge on your end. I mean, it seems to me that we need to hear that perspective to try to understand how it could possibly be changed or where the other person is coming from.
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get Mormons to talk no matter what angle you come. I worked in Salt Lake City as a journalist for almost a decade. And what outsiders don't understand is it's almost an impenetrable fortress to get in and get a quote, even a written statement from their leaders. And so no matter how we framed it, it was impossible. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, what the viewers of our documentary don't understand is that because I worked in Salt Lake and had a relationship and a rapport with some of their PR people, I was able to have some very candid conversations. One in particular, a very long conversation where I said, look, your church deserves the right to respond to these allegations and to our research. They deserve the right to sit down and refute it and participate in the fact-finding. And I was told point blank, and this is a direct quote, but we're not interested in doing those kind of stories. We are interested in doing stories that make us look good. To which I responded, Buddy, which is his name, that's not journalism. And he said, we're not interested in journalism. We're a public relations department. And so it was frustrating and it was difficult. But I know from being an insider, not only from within the church, but also a journalist who worked in their town, as I think they would see it, it's very hard, no matter what angle you come at them with, to get them to respond.
On the other hand, the Mormons have, in fact, been criticizing this documentary without seeing it, but nevertheless, you are essentially preaching to the converted with this particular film, and I'm wondering if that reflects this fact-finding, that particular subjective approach.
With respect, you know, we've had a few people say this is preaching to the choir, preaching to the converted, and I think it's short-sighted, frankly. We have a grandiose citizenry who are not converted, because obviously Proposition 8 passed. And so, obviously, we have a built-in audience who are going to look at the film. But I think anyone who says we're preaching to the choir, it doesn't look at the fact that there's a great deal of people in our country who are not converted and need to see this film. And this film is not a gay film. It belongs to the voters. Belongs to voters.
But so your audience then would be non-Mormons for this who are on the fence? I mean, that 50% of the population that voted yes on Prop 8?
My audience, you know, that I would certainly hope that those who were on the fence would consider this and see where perhaps their vote was cast in error. But I want everybody to see it. You know, this film belongs, like I say, to the voter. Voters who, like the film asserts, deserve to know where the heat, where the money is coming from, how the strings are being pulled in a ballot measure or any other measure that you're voting on. They deserve to know 3 months before they cast that very sacred vote in the ballot box, not 3 months after when a documentary maker starts to dig. And really, I think in many instances, relative to Proposition 8 and other measures like it that the Mormon Church has also supported, I think the voters get the shaft because they don't get to see the man behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm. How did you secure the audio file that has the missing message that came from the Mormon elders.
Yeah, well, Mormons put a call out to their members in California from via a Salt Lake City satellite, and that was obtained by the film's co-director and one of the producers, Stephen Greenstreet. And he obtained it through the internet. You know, I looked
through the internet torrent, secretly, illicitly.
There was a website overseas that somehow picked up this. I mean, literally, somehow picked up this broadcast overseas, recorded it, and as Stephen tells me, it became available. In fact, he shared it with the audience here in New York last night. But you know, I look at the candor with which Mormons spoke to their members. And you have to wonder, you know, knowing that they put such a high value on looking good and knowing the potential risk of getting this involved in politics, you have to wonder if this wasn't an object lesson to them of, whoops, when we speak, it ends up on YouTube, it ends up on the internet, and we better measure our words even more carefully. Because it got out there, and we got it.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to also ask about the box of secret documents. You don't actually cite a source, and there's no indication in the film that you made efforts to corroborate this with the LDS or to even contact the names that were possibly on the emails or the memos. I mean, how I'm a viewer, let's say, who is on the fence. I see this. There's no provenance. Did you make any steps to confirm the provenance? I mean, and why isn't this in the film? Why isn't there any? I mean, is there some sort of website component here that one can use to find authenticity?
I've actually met the person who took the documents out of the church offices, out of the archives, and so there was some corroboration that went on there. And also, what a lot of people don't know is during the federal case that's going on right now, those documents were provided to the case as well, and which led to subpoenas of other documents from the Mormon Church, and in those subpoenas we were able to see that the documents that the Mormon Church had to hand over correlated with the ones we have. So it's a matter of court record, from my understanding of the people inside the trial, that they match.
Which court record is this? Which case?
In the federal trial that's going on right now, Perry versus Schwarzenegger.
Okay, got it. And speaking of which, I actually wanted to ask you why you didn't cover Strauss versus Horton, the three cases that were consolidated into the California Supreme Court. The Supreme Court upheld Proposition 8. It would seem to me that that's just as much a part of the story as the Mormon mobilization, and also the efforts to try to take Proposition 8 off of the ballot that were again rebuffed by the California Supreme Court.
Well, so the thesis of our film is 8, the Mormon proposition, and so really the onus is on us to prove their strategy, right? And to prove to the audience how it came together, how the strategy was formed. And so we feel like we did that, and anything else is outside of that focus. And you know, there's so much here. I mean, you're right. There is so much here that if the citizenry really wanted to see what's going on, I mean, you could produce 10, 15 hours of programming just in the federal trial alone. I mean, the fact that they are not allowing the testimony to be televised to me is sickening, and could be hours and hours and hours of documentary material that we could obviously add to the film, but
hours and hours of dramatization as
sure. But I don't know an audience that wants to sit through a 10-hour documentary, and so, you know, look for the books, I guess. Look for other documentaries, and I hope there are more made.
I'm wondering if you believe that any Mormon can believe in same-sex marriage.
I do. I know that some of my even high-profile Mormon friends believe that I have the same rights as they do, and I have the right to claim those rights. It would be surprising, I think, to a lot of Mormons to know that the one of the most popular governors in the state of Utah, John Huntsman, and his wife Mary Kay are dear friends of mine. John has now been appointed the ambassador to China by President Obama. And they are very close friends of mine, and John Huntsman has gone so far in that state. Now, a lot of people wouldn't like that he didn't come right out and advocate for marriage, but he advocated in that state for civil unions. And that was a huge step. And Mary Kay said to me, "You realize why we took this stand and took the heat. It was because of you and your partner and because of our relationship and friendship with you." So can Mormons get it? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Then I'm wondering why you didn't profile, for example, Laura Compton, who started that site, MormonsForMarriage.com. I mean, that seems to me a decided apostasy in relation to this particular issue, that not all Mormons are some sort of Borg-like collective.
Yeah. Well, and there were a few who did dare speak out. There were many who were punished in certain ways for speaking out. And so that created a culture where they didn't dare. So people like Laura are heroes. But again, the thesis was to prove, look, this was their proposition. It wasn't the Catholic proposition. It was, you know, the Mormons were the man behind the curtain. And so, again, I welcome any documentary who can profile her or the other few, the minority of Mormons who stood up for marriage equality and continue to do so, and who are now crossing the aisle and seeing where the inequity happened.
But surely deflecting such criticism from the Mormon Church by having someone like Laura Compton in your documentary would have allowed, I suppose, for those sitting on the fence to consider the issue perhaps a little bit more.
Maybe she would have provided a light that people could follow. But again, that's not what the film was. The film was to show the inequity, because that was the great wrong that happened. And you know, in an hour and 20 minutes, that's the time we had. That's the time we had to get that, to try to prove that case.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up Bruce Barton and his very harrowing story about being forced to watch pornography, being forced to participate in electroshock aversion therapy. I should point out that, yes, that's absolutely terrible, but BYU stopped doing that at the end of the 70s. That's their account. You say that BYU is still doing electroshock aversion therapy in the last 5-10 years?
We have had people come forward who have said that they have knowledge that it happened into the 90s. Those accounts were softer than Bruce's, so obviously we went with Bruce's. But certainly, you know, growing up Mormon, I was aware of aversion therapies, and I was aware that there were people out there who still considered it maybe a possibility. So that, you know, this whole idea of electric shock therapy and aversion therapy is still out there. It's a matter of legend in the Mormon community. But, you know, Mormons by and large dismiss that this ever happened. So really the only accounts we have are those of the victims of this. And it doesn't, you know, to me the reason why we featured that in the film was to show the lengths to which people will go in a person's life to try to fix something that they see as a great evil, a great wrong, and the damage that that does. And to me, Bruce's story, it captures sort of a real-life manifestation of what we see in Proposition 8 in the politics. It's the same thing.
But efforts to revise the Honor Code in 2007 and make it more, I mean, it's not the best revision, but it is nevertheless a step forward by BYU to attempt to grapple with this particular reality. I mean, why not show that kind of progress within the Mormon community?
What do you mean in BYU?
Well, the Honor Code, where they revised it in which they now condemn behavior rather than sexual orientation. So it's, you know, it's not the best, but it's still at least some kind of effort on their part to try to understand something that, you know, that is a reality outside the Mormons.
You know what? I actually see it as a step backwards, because they take something that is inborn, that is fundamental to who I am, and they call it a behavior. No different than nose picking is a behavior.
Yeah.
And to me, it's offensive and it's wrong, and I think it's a step backwards. They were able to frame it and say, well, we're softening our approach, and it's a behavior, and you know what? Who I love is not a behavior. A behavior is nose picking.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And to me, it was a step backwards, and it's arrogant, and it's condescending, and I think it's damaging to the young people at BYU who are gay, who are struggling with this, to have them say, "Oh, this is not who you are, you poor thing. It's a behavior. It's a behavior you can fix." Mm-mm.
One last question, because we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you about the ongoing efforts by the Fair Political Practices Commission. In recent weeks, they fined the church $5,538 for not reporting a mere $37,000 worth of contributions. Now, this would seem to suggest that the onus for that considerable amount of money that was put into the Prop 8 campaign came largely from individuals. I mean, how fair is it to really view the Mormon Church? Yes, there was pressure, but these individuals were complicit in making that decision, whether it's that $50,000 that Sacramento family put in. They made the choice to do this. So isn't the hatred that you vilify, rightly, I think, in this film, isn't that something that is more based off of an individual choice rather than a collective entity like this?
It doesn't matter. Mormons knew that their members are obedient and would do what they say. Ultimately, the organization knew that they would be jeopardizing their tax-free, tax-exempt status in a big way if they went ahead and flushed the system with millions of dollars. So what they did is they literally sent their members out to battle and put their members and other religions, the Catholic Church, on the front line, and then they hid behind them and let them take the bullets and let them give the money. And to me, you really can see sort of trigger language, and they pulled the trigger and they used and took advantage of their members' obedience. And to me, the obedience of their members that is inherent, that they know they have, they've got that. That is a commodity. It's a measurable commodity. It's an asset that they have, no different than their money, and they used it.
Yeah.
And critics of this would say this was an incursion by religion into politics, and it was inappropriate, and it robbed people of their rights.
There's plenty to talk about, but I'm afraid I have to let you loose. Mm-hmm. Reed, thanks so much. It was a pleasure chatting.
Thank you. Great interview. I appreciate your questions.
Great. Thanks.